Now.
Sports talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
The sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
A 3-1 series lead on the Astros after a win last night that took nearly 5 hours to complete. Baseball's got a problem with their length of game. That we know. But at least when the stakes are high and you've got a lot of action in the game itself, it's not as bad. Last night was sort of a memorable night if you stayed up for it.
Yep.
If you lasted.
Are we just going to order
all
pizzas?
4 hours and 40 minutes of that game last night, which I did, man. I was glued.
I took a little fifth-inning nap.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I went to bed. Beetle, thank God for Beetle's text. It's like, I was out.
I mean, I took
like wake up, Zoe.
I had like a 5-minute nap.
Do your
and
job.
I was able to power through until about.
I get the do your job text.
12:45, and after that.
What time did I ask you guys if I should put on a pot of coffee? I regretted not doing that.
Like 11:30 or something.
Yeah, and I regretted not doing that.
There was a point I had to mute the conversation because the phone was going bing, ping.
The conversation of our show is always muted on my phone.
Oh, I know.
It's never.
I don't have the ringer on.
Oh,
in my phone
I don't
know
that function.
It's which is why when I get a text from anyone else, I make sure
I had it off. But then it was lighting up. The phone would light up like.
Put it face down.
Yeah, I thought I'm missing something. You never know. You never know when someone's trying to get in touch with you. You know. But yeah, I mean, people are saying that's one of the greatest playoff games. Like that you've seen it sometime. Does it feel that way? I just think it was entertaining.
Oh, I wouldn't say it was one of the greatest games.
It doesn't have like the Betts home run, JD Martinez home run, Bregman home runs, or back to back type drama that you had like, you know, like Manny Ramirez or David Ortiz or those Yankee games that you went back and forth on.
Yeah, I was entertained.
I think the series is more exciting than we thought it was gonna
be. But that game last night had everything. What didn't that game have?
Oh, you had drama against the wall.
You had home runs. You had big strikeouts. You had big plays defensively.
Pitching decisions.
How about Matt Barnes in his final pitch of the night getting a guy looking the way that he did with that big hook? Oh, man, did that take some balls to throw that thing.
And another good night behind the plate, I thought, for the ump. Who was it last night? A little more generous strike zone, especially on the outside.
Give me a second.
But after Joe West, the game before, and then last night, it was pretty good.
I think they've done a good job in this series.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
They've been on top of all the calls, too. Even
Mark Carlson was last night.
Even once we'll go to review, they got him right, like the first call, the first time. Like their gut was always right. It's usually been right 80% of the time. That's pretty good.
Right on top of it. Thought they had a consistent strike zone again last night. But that game had a little bit of everything. It did. I was texting with Maz last night, and he's no. He was doing TV after the game, which
brutal.
I feel bad for him. But he said, he was like, you know, this isn't a great game. I'm like, yeah, probably not by definition a great game, but entertaining. I mean, you go through the start of that game last night, and you go inning by inning. You had runs in every single inning of the game except the ninth. There were runs scored in every inning but the ninth inning. And in terms of just the start of the game, you know, those first five innings, you had all kinds of things going on. It was a great win. The thing that I do take out of it, though, is that even though I don't think Alex Cora was perfect in managing the game and managing his pitchers last night, I do agree with him for keeping Porcello in. In fact, I don't think he had much of a chance. And I think there was a shift in mentality as they got to the later innings in that game last night where he knew he had to go for it. Once he had a lead, and he had a two-run lead especially, it was we need to get out of this game with a win. We absolutely must win this game. And I think later in the night, he decided to sort of punt on game five and say, this is the game we got to win. Take the 3-1 lead. You can afford a loss in game five and then get back home. That's how I think it was managed last night, especially factoring in that Sale is not going to pitch for the Red Sox tonight. That's how I think he managed the night. I think he did it right. I think he struck a nice balance of how he was going to manage the night in the early innings versus the late innings once they had a lead. And I just think that him, his personality, his confidence at times, which he's had all year long, very confident guy. Dan Shaughnessy has told us that last year when he was going through the hiring process, there was a fear among Red Sox officials and their front office that he was too confident. It was borderline cocky, and they worried about that. I felt like in a game like last night, his mentality of sort of that confidence and not getting too high on some of the good things that were happening and sort of him pushing in the late innings, the way that he went out and talked to Kimbrel and took that mound visit and basically said, let's go, you know, and walked off the mound. I think there is something to that in terms of him managing the mental aspects of the game for his team. I thought that sort of showed up last night. I thought he did a good job of that.
I mean, you watch him at times in the dugout, too, and he's like, he's giving a whistle, and he's like, back up here, and he looks at him, and he's looking at Vasquez. The communication, I think, is just so on point with everybody. You know, even, you know, if there's a decision needs to be made at first or second, are we going to go to review? He's up at the edge of the dugout. He's got the hold. Okay, let's go. Let's go. Let's review it now. Everything is bam. There's no indecision with him. And I just think he's managing with feeling his gut. To the point where you talk about, is he managing outs or innings? You're at the point now where, tell me the last time a starting pitcher went seven innings and went deep. Talking about like the old school style, you know, good, really good starts in the playoffs.
Like
you
Nathan
haven't had
Evaldi?
These guys can barely.
Yeah. Yeah, Evaldi, but that was a 16-1 game.
I don't count Nathan Evaldi, really. I mean, because, you know, I mean, but Evaldi's pitched his way into it.
You've got to count Nathan Evaldi. He has I'm talking about in a big
you,
way.
When you win 108 games and you roll into the playoffs, your two horses can't get through freaking four innings. There's something wrong here. There's something wrong with
he's got
sport.
A huge, he's got a pulse of the room.
Even them.
A pulse of the whole thing.
I like, agree.
Who does?
Cora's going like he has the pulse of everything totally. That's going on. Farrell, that's the one thing Farrell lacked, it seemed like, was the pulse of what the hell was going on around him.
Well, the bunting is the opposite of the facade of the bunting is a replica of what the playoffs indicate.
You know what last night showed with him, too? There's been this push to be aggressive, be aggressive, be aggressive. And we've even talked about this, that the aggressive managers have had their moves pay off in the playoffs. Last night, he wasn't aggressive just for the sake of being aggressive. And I thought the guys on TBS missed this. And I thought a lot of people that were, you know, talking about it, social media last night, were missing the fact that you don't just give Porcello the quick hook for the sake of he clearly doesn't have it tonight. And he clearly didn't. He clearly did not have it last night. But
I mean,
the aggressive move is there, pull him out of the game, go to the next guy. And there are times to take a longer view, which he did in that game, which was the longer view of not only last night's game, but tonight's game. He started to manage the series there, which I thought was the right time to do it, which speaks to what Jim is saying, is not only having your finger on the pulse of your team, but your finger and feel on the pulse of where the series is at and where you need to be in that series.
Which is, it's even more of a feather in his hat that his team is sitting there at 3-1. Up against another 100-win club that a lot of people viewed as to be the best team in baseball all around as far as top to bottom. They have it all. They're the best built. And his top two guys and his closer smell like hippo dung. Like, they haven't done anything. You know, the closer has got the shakes. The top two guys, you got one guy, he doesn't even feel good. He doesn't even strength. The other guy's out there raking. I'm just raking. I'll throw some pitches in the eighth or ninth inning. I'm not going to go in there. But, I mean, you are up 3-1 with one game to go to get to the World Series, and that tells me the guy's managed his ass off based on the way the top two guys and his closer have pitched. And, really, his hitters haven't hit. The two big, your two MVPs have not hit. You're getting carried by the middle-of-the-order type guys and, you know, the everyday players, the average Joes, guys like Pierce. JBJ's the MVP of this freaking series.
No surprise
That's
here.
That's all Cora, man.
The Red Sox are underdogs for Game 5 tonight. More on that is coming up right here in the Action Update. Dan Shaughnessy will join us from Houston next.
Here's the Action Update. Action Update. And also check out the Over Under 98.5 podcast on our 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
This is Brent Musburger's Action Update for 98.5 The Sports Hub. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on candidates in an online dashboard. at Indeed.com/hire. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
With Justin Verlander pitching a win-or-die game at home against David Price, the Houston Astros are opening as 75-cent favorites tonight to win against the Red Sox and force the American League Championship Series back to Boston for a Game 6 on Saturday. Football tonight, after opening a pick'em, the Broncos are a point-and-a-half favorite visiting Arizona. The total is 42. Stanford is laying 2.5 at Arizona State. With LeBron James making his Lakers debut, L.A. is a 3.5-point underdog tonight at Portland. From Las Vegas, I'm Ron Flatter. This has been your Action Update on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't think there are three words in sports that get more people excited about what is yet to come.
Zolak and Bertrand.
I think there's issues with testosterone.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Runners will be off of the crack of the bat with two outs. Kimbrel deals. Bregman in the air, left field. Benintendi dives, and he makes the catch. Oh, what a play! Game saver, Andrew Benintendi. The Red Sox win on a spectacular catch by Benintendi in left field. Wow! What a game! What a finish!
That was last night. Red Sox take a 3-1 series lead. Let's go to Houston. That's where Dan Shaughnessy is. He joins us now on Zolak and Bertrand. Hi, Dan.
What's going on, guys?
What's
anybody
up, Brett?
Watch the end of it?
I was up till the bitter end, my friend.
I fell asleep. Nice. Beto woke me up.
I started texting Zoe in the ninth inning. I thought Price was going to make it into the game.
Then I got pissed when he didn't because I thought Price, he gave it up.
Yeah, Price didn't make it in. Zoe's
he's going to be the he's going to be the hero tonight, fellas.
Oh,
David
good.
Price. Can't you
good.
Feel it?
How deep do you think he can go tonight, Dan?
I'm telling you, he's gonna win the ALCS for him tonight because there's no pressure.
You're being a jackass now, aren't you?
No.
There's no pressure.
It's a house money game. They're
he's
up
pitching against
one.
Verlander.
Everything was put into that game last night, and they said, we don't care about Game 5. We just got to get this one because Verlander's pitching tomorrow. So all the pressure's off. They're away from Fenway. Everyone figures they're going to lose. It's a reverse lock game.
How sad David is that? Price, how sad is that you're even saying it
you know,
right now?
You just,
a $32 million pitcher is saying he has no pressure on him because nobody expects him to win.
You just
it's
keep saying this.
Him.
Oh, my
you
God.
You just keep saying that Price is going to turn it around just so that one time you'll be right.
This is the one. This is the one.
Right.
Really, it's all teed up, and you know they'll all be saying, "Oh, David Price, he came through. He was the pitcher we always thought it'd be." This is the one.
No, okay, but how deep do you think he can go in the game if he pitches well?
He'll get into the sixth.
Wow! Even after all that throwing last night, warming
a lot
up
of throwing
there.
Last night, we were pretty sure he'd come in. What about your closer, Calvin Schiraldi? Revisited this guy. Holy smokes.
What the hell has happened to
he's
him?
He's Calvin Schiraldi with less sweat, is what I would say.
His hand, he can't get that hand dry. He's got the flop sweats out there like Albert Brooks in Broadcast News. And he
that's
is
a reference
like going
everyone
to the,
gets.
He's going to the rosin bag. He's going to the dirt. When they came out for the mound conference, he threw yet another baseball out of the play to get it. He can't get a dry ball because his hand is just running, dripping with sweat. And that's why he walks the bases loaded. Throws a cookie to Bregman, which he tomahawks. Lucky they were, you know, they caught the ball. But I mean, he's a mess right now. And so they've won 6 out of 8 postseason games against 100 win teams with no closer and not much from JD Martinez.
Yeah, I mean, when Bregman hit that one and it was dying there. Did you, from your vantage point, did you think that thing was dropping and that was trouble?
That is the ball that Carl Crawford could not catch in 2011 when they went down in Baltimore. That's the ball. The sinking liner that handcuffs the outfielder coming in, you know, he's cross going across his body, all bad there. And you know, this guy, he took a chance. That's like going for a 2-point conversion when you're down one and the clock's run out,
yeah.
You know, and you either win or you lose.
There's no backup.
If he doesn't get it.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get it, everybody scores, they lose the game. So he took a shot and, you know, he's a really good baseball player. He's pretty fearless. He was a guy you wanted in that moment because he doesn't, you know, he's big enough for the moment.
Yeah, he's a guy who showed up, I think, in a big way last night.
Yep.
And that catch just sort of wrapped it all up nicely for him. What do you think of Cora's moves last night with the pitching staff? I liked that he left Porcello in. I liked that. I did not like that he took Barnes out as soon as he did.
What was he doing with Barnes, Beetle? One batter. And now Kimbrel's got to get 6 outs, which he hasn't done all year. And He's given up a run in every one of his postseason appearances, of all of his saves anyway. So, yeah, the Barnes one was curious. Why doesn't Barnes come back out? So when we saw Kimbrel, we thought, well, we're going to see Price in the ninth because Kimbrel's sure not going to get six outs. And he, I guess he staggered through it. But, you know, he had a guy hit a, you know, Kemp hit a single and ran into an out there. I mean, he put like six guys, seven guys on base. It was just really messy. But, yeah, that was the one I thought, you know, he's gotten away with. Cora's really on a roll there. I thought the Barnes thing was going to bite him, but it didn't.
Well, what do you think A-Rod, Dan, and how he has fallen? And say Price does struggle early. Is there a chance he goes?
Yeah.
How useless was he last night? And what was that all about?
What the hell is happening?
Why do you think he made it into the game when he did there?
I don't know, Beatles. That was a curious one. And it was like the Wade Miley, you know, like we thought he's today's starter, right? And he is available for early, you know, early action. But they have no faith in him. He's become one of the – he's outside the circle of trust now. You know, comes in, walks the guy, see you later. I think they've just had enough that they gave him another shot there. And they're so out of bodies. There's so few guys that Cora trusts out there.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to piece it together to get through. And like I say, but they had to win that game last night. That's how they felt. They felt that if they lost the game, all the pressure goes to today. They can't beat Verlander in a pressure game, and they come back down 3-2. So now they're in the catbird seat. They got the one they wanted.
They're going World Series, aren't they?
Well, I mean, they're tough. Well, of course you say that when they're up 3-1. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and predict they're going to lose three straight. Like we just said, they've won six out of eight against the Yankees and Astros.
They would have to lose three straight for them not to go.
They just won six out of eight.
Dan, you're planning your appearances with us next week. They're going to the World Series, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Tuesday, Wednesday. Game one, Tuesday night. And again, we haven't even talked about Chris Sale. They're doing this without Chris Sale. Who is he going to even pitch again this year? I mean, It's all the stuff we worried about at the end of the year, and that Yankee start and the one inning against the Yanks in relief kind of fooled everybody into thinking, oh, he's back. He's Chris Sale again. No, he never was. He's never been that guy. And since July 27th, a different guy. We don't know what's going on now, if he's going to pitch again. But, you know, the one game against the Yanks, he threw all sliders, cracked about 93, and we just assumed he was back. And you can tell something's wrong.
Did you hear Dave Dombrowski pregame yesterday, Dan?
He was very animated and he was like angry. And that's coming from up top. I know the owners are very, very miffed at Houston. They feel they got away with one. And so he's carrying out ownership's anger there is my interpretation.
And it is
a little weird.
Go ahead. No, finish your thought.
Well, I think Manfred looks really weak here. I mean, you know, the Sox, I thought, got off easy last year with the Apple Watch thing, and they got fined. And these guys are up to something here, and they don't get anything. They got caught red-handed twice, having a guy bounce from the camera well, and all these phony excuses like, we're just cheating to make sure they're not cheating. I mean, that was ridiculous. Someone said it's like going into you rob the convenience store to make sure the next guy doesn't rob it. You know, I mean, what is that supposed to be? They were caught, and nothing happened to them.
Buster Olney had a report last night saying that many baseball execs across baseball were appalled by how Manfred handled it after threatening in the past to come down really hard on violators that were, you know, doing surveillance and involving technology and their cheating or sign stealing. And now nothing happened. In fact, I thought it was embarrassing that baseball backed up their story, saying that they were just trying to, you know, make sure other teams weren't cheating.
It was crazy, you know, and then it's like case closed. We're done here. Well, the Red Sox are really unhappy about that, and I don't blame them.
Okay, but in addition to talking about the cheating scandal, he also sort of was very vague on Chris Sale. And at the end of it was even saying that you'd have to ask Chris Sale about, you know, what it is that's bothering him at this point or how he feels, because
which would be great, but they've made him totally unavailable.
Right.
You know, NFL style. I mean, he's like there's a cone of silence around him, and they're producing, you know, they have people we don't want to talk to available. And the guy, the only guy anybody cares about is not available.
So between him saying it's up to him to disclose it and the pitcher not being available to anybody, they've hidden him. And in baseball, there's all kinds of access, really. So when you see this situation, don't you automatically assume it's worse than whatever they're saying it is?
Absolutely. Everyone has to think that. No rational thinker can sit back and say, well, I guess he's got a little inflammation in his shoulder and they're just holding him back a few more days. No, he hasn't been right since July 27th. And we don't know if we're going to see him at all again this year. I mean, now it's going to be, oh, he's starting game six on, you know, at Fenway on Saturday. Well, we'll see. Or if he starts game one of the World Series, we'll see. Because he wasn't, you know, the same guy. He has not been the same guy. That Yankee start, go back and look at it. He got through. He got the win. A lot of sliders. Never cracked 94. Not the same guy.
And not a good spot Saturday if he is the starter. And that's what he's listed as, considering the type of weather it's rolling in here this weekend. And it is going to be cold and raw.
I mean, it's amazing what they're doing with how many issues they have. We just listed, you know, Sale and Kimbrel.
Price.
JD's not really getting it done. Price. And
it's all Cora, Dan, right? This is all Cora.
They're doing a good job. I mean, and they're deep, and they have a lot of people. I mean, the number nine hitter is going to be the MVP of the ALCS if it goes this way. So how often does that happen? I mean, we've really gotten great contributions from a lot of guys. Steve Pierce has been great. I mean, it's and Devers, you know, they got to keep Devers in there because he, you know, two RBI knock in the first inning last night. I mean, they all suck defensively, but you got to go with him. He's the bat.
Dan, does Devers' swing look a little messed up to you?
Yeah, and I think they know that. You know, I mean, he got out of sorts with the high cheese early on in the season, and he's jumpy, but he's still a threat to walk into one. And I don't think he's got a little bit of that Manny thing where he's kind of a clean slate up there. I think he just goes up and hacks. You know?
I thought they had sort of, you know, worked some things out with his swing early in the season. And now when I see him up there, he's a little bit all over the place to the point where I say, this is what happens if the guy doesn't play every day. You know, I think that factors into this for him. When you don't have a guy playing every day and a young player who's as young as he is, 22 years old, still developing, second year in the majors, all that stuff, I think that impacts these guys, and I think it's impacted him.
I agree with that. I think it's hard for him to do. And plus, you know, they scout the hell out of these guys, and they know where he's vulnerable. And the high G's we referenced earlier is a big spot. And now swinging the balls out of the zone.
All right, Dan. So after Price goes six tonight, as you have said, he'll make it into the six. Who's your first out of the bullpen tonight?
Razzers.
How do they handle this?
Yeah.
I think, you know, the circle of trust, it's Brazier and Barnes.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I don't see him deviating off that. I mean, I guess Porcello's probably available for an inning, right?
What's the availability of Brazier, do you think, tonight?
I do not know that. I don't know. Cora will be asked that before the game, I'm sure. I mean, Evaldi, Porcello, you know, I just think that they've got to be thinking about game six. If Verlander is dealing and they can see they're not going to win the game, then, you know, get ready for Joe Kelly or Heath Hembree or whoever's on the roster. They kind of strapped themselves, Vito, with the 11-pitcher thing. Blake Swihart has not played. And they really could have used the 12th pitcher, which everybody else did in this round.
Yeah, whoever that 12th pitcher was going to be, though, was going to be crap.
I know.
So
I know.
I'm not sure that we can say that because they didn't have much available. Unless you really wanted what? You know, you wanted Pomeranz on the roster? Well, who did you
Pomeranz.
Want?
Brian Johnson. You know,
Brian Johnson. Junk.
I know.
All junk. All right, Dan. Appreciate the time.
See you, Dan.
Appreciate you checking in.
See you next week at the World Series, fellas. All David right. Price.
We'll see Dan Shaughnessy next Wednesday in studio with us here on Zolak and Bertrand, and the Red Sox may be in the World Series at that point.
So if they choke, he won't be here because he'll be covering the World Series.
Oh, he's covering the World Series either way. So he won't be in studio if the Red Sox manage to lose the series. 617-779-0985. Why don't we get back to your Red Sox calls? We've got some open lines now if you want to grab it. We'll do that after these headlines with Hardy.
Sports Hub headlines.
Red Sox can put away the Astros tonight. They're up 3-1 in the best of seven after last night's 8-6 win in Houston. But they'll have to do it against Justin Verlander. He gets the start for the home team tonight. David Price goes for the Sox. 8:09 first pitch. Dodgers got a 5-2 win over the Brewers last night. So they're one win away from going to the World Series. They're up 3-2 in that best of seven. Bruins lost 5-2 to the Flames in Calgary. Tonight, they'll go again, this time against the Oilers in Edmonton. Judd Sirott and Bob Beers have the call starting at 8:30. That's the pregame right here on your Bruins radio network. And the NFL begins tonight. Week 7, 2-4 Broncos will visit the 1-5 Arizona Cardinals. Headlines are brought to you by my hair doctors, Dr. Robert Leonard and Dr. Matthew Lopresti. 1-800-GET-HAIR. I'm Hardy on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub. More headlines in 30 minutes.
Without Zolak and Bertrand, your workday is just pushing papers and eating lunch.
What, is there a problem?
With Zolak and Bertrand, it's pushing papers, eating lunch, and talking sports.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Way better. Zolak and Bertrand. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Was the fan reaching out in this play into the field of play, in your opinion?
No, he wasn't. It's the most egregious play I've ever seen in baseball. Because when you go in the stands, it's fair game. They can catch the ball. They're not going to just let the ball hit them in the chest. That ball was going right direct to his chest right there. When you see that ball there, you're going to put your hands up to catch it. Now his glove comes into play. Yeah, he could have caught the ball, but he might have missed the ball as well. So the ball is over the fence. How you go from hitting a home run, a ball being over the fence, the fan didn't reach over the fence, the ball hit him in the chest, and all of a sudden now you're out. If anything, you should be standing on second.
Why would he be standing on second? Will someone explain that part of this to me?
Yeah, because it's the most egregious play ever in the history of baseball.
No, at the very least, he should be standing on second. Why? Why would he be standing on second? That is an all-or-nothing situation. It's either going to be ruled a home run or an out. I don't know where ground rule double somehow came into it. They thought that on the Houston broadcast as well. What? Where did that rule come from? We're going to change this to a ground rule double.
I thought the Machado play the other night was the most egregious play in baseball so far in these playoffs, not what you saw last night. That's just fan interference. Simple fan interference.
All right, Gary Sheffield thinks that's
the most egregious play I've ever seen in baseball.
That's absurd.
That's like the Belichick.
Anyone who's got that take on that play.
Talib hit on Welker.
Anyone who feels that way is just not being honest about the evidence that we have. He was sitting in a studio in Atlanta. We were all sitting in our homes last night. None of us were there. None of us saw it in person the way Joe West did or the way people in the auxiliary press box in center field saw it last night. The angle of the camera views is not great. It's not definitive. There's no direct shot down the line to know if the hands were crossing the imaginary line or not. My opinion is, yes, they were, and the umps got the call right. I believe they got it right. But I'm not going to sit here and say you're an idiot for thinking otherwise or that it's the worst play I've ever seen or anything so just strong, because what are you basing that on?
You're amazing.
Just basing it on you think you're right and you think everyone else is wrong.
So Sheffield is he calling the call egregious?
The play. No, he said that play.
He's obviously talking about the call.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he's never seen something so badly called in a major league game. Like, yes, you have.
Of
Gary Sheffield,
you
spent
part
a lot of time in the game.
You've seen worse calls than that.
Probably
you participated in it.
Yeah, maybe even in that game. I mean, no. That one is, at the very least, it could go either way. At the very least. You could have called it either way, and it would have been upheld.
Right.
So how is that egregious?
Right.
How could it be egregious either way?
And you know what it is? I think what happens is the way it was called on the field, whether it was called a home run or an out, was going to stick.
Yes.
That's how I feel.
Yes.
However that call was made on the field,
not enough to
was
going to
stick because they didn't have good evidence. And that's why I think they looked at it for so long.
It's the most egregious play I've ever seen.
I don't think so.
In baseball.
It's amazing that you have all that structure. You have the roof that slides open and back. And
yeah, you're really caught up on the roof today.
No, but like nobody would ever think the idea to slap one of those high-def cams up and make a permanent part so you can look down upon the game.
The only way you're going to know is if you have a camera directly above that wall looking straight down.
I know, but even
a straight
even
line
one up,
of
you can at least tell if a guy's
feet.
Hand's over.
Shut up.
No,
seriously. Talking about. Just
no,
one camera
why
up
Why do you
above
keep saying
wall?
Shut up? Because
you're making fun of me.
No, because that doesn't make any sense. You can't have it in one static spot and look all the way down.
You can put it above the center of the wall, and it could.
Because of the angle. This is why we can't.
This is why we don't have a great view of it now.
Because anytime it's on an angle, if it's on an angle, you can't tell whether it's down the line or not. You keep saying shut up because you can't back up any of your arguments. And the fact is, if you put something up above and look straight down, you know where you can tell if you're crossing the plane? On that section and maybe about 5 feet either side. So you'd have to go all the way along. Oh, and by the way,
but I put
it
your
curves.
Head in this and I'll back my argument
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Yeah, bring friends. You'd have to go all the way around the entire perimeter of the field, everywhere where you're going to have fans interacting with it. What do you mean, no kidding? You're the one who said to put a camera
up there. It's like putting a goal line cam. You need to have it exactly down at the one spot. You can't put one. You got to put two.
Well, the goal line cam actually works because it's just one line.
Right.
And you can look straight all the line way down the line. But the problem is then with the goal line cam is, oh, what if somebody steps in front of the goal line cam and the play is somewhere further down the goal line?
You know how people live through their phones and film everything? There's somebody that's got to have a pretty decent shot of this from out there in the bleachers.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's an assumption.
Not that they'd turn it in. Not that it would matter. I mean, it doesn't change the outcome. But, I mean, everybody's filming everything out there. Be nice to see if, hey, whose hand's here, whose hand's there.
Somebody had to have had their phone out looking at
yes,
that thing, of course.
Maybe, but what's to say that whoever it was that was filming the entire game, I don't know. I've been to a lot of baseball games. I haven't seen people that just film the action the whole
security
game.
Guy.
I don't know, Hardy. I see people that a lot of those people in that picture. I didn't see anybody with a phone in their hand.
You see people that film, like, the final out or, you know, an important at-bat for a major player. I don't know that. In the bottom of the first inning, you've got someone filming all the action with an angle that would be better than what we already have.
If there's an Astros fan and it shows clearly that he was interfered with, maybe that video.
Listen, they had a camera down in that corner, but even that wasn't perfectly aligned with the wall.
No.
And you've got a security guard that was leaning over to watch the play, and he blocked the view of the camera. There it is. If you're watching us on NBC Sports Boston,
is it in?
Security guy.
Did they get it?
The black shirt on and the word security across his back.
Do your job.
Is blocking whatever view of that we were going to get.
I enjoyed some of the photoshops of that guy blocking the great moments in history.
My favorite one was the one that I retweeted, which was of him blocking the shot from the grassy knoll of the motorcade of JFK. And it was like, what happened? Oh, we don't know. The security guy had stepped in the way. I mean, that's what went on there. So listen, the views that you got were all on an angle. You can sort of piece together the clues from looking at it. It looks like they got it right to me, but I'm not going to sit here and, you know, shout down someone who says I disagree because it was that close and we don't have better angles of it. And I think whatever was called on the field was going to stick. And I also believe that's not why the Astros lost. That is not why they lost the game.
You should be standing on second.
In fact, their manager agrees. He even said after the game that it's too convenient to try and put that as the play that somehow lost them the game because they lost by two runs.
Right.
Because as he said, there's a lot of baseball left, and they had multiple leads after that happened. And they blew it. They made a number of other bad mistakes. You know when you can really complain about officials and umpires and referees? You can complain when your team is perfect, when you make no mistakes in a game. And yet we can sit here tonight and say, well, you left Josh James in too long. Carlos Correa couldn't be bothered to touch second base on a double play opportunity when he had Rafael Devers running down to first. He had time to make the play. He missed the bag by about 3 inches. Good call by the umpire on that one, being on top of the play. You had that mistake. You had other mistakes in this game, like trying to take second when Mookie Betts was ready to throw you out. That was a bad mistake late in this game. Number nine hitter hitting it down the line and then being thrown out at second. I mean, what are you doing? Take the hit.
It was odd, though, on the next double, he made it there easily. And it was a very similar spot where the ball ended up that Mookie had to play. It's just difference in speed of the runner more than anything. But, yeah, trying to take second on that, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Do those fans get kicked out of Fenway? Because we've seen them kicked out of the Fenway before. Like on the Green Monster. If that had happened at Fenway, would those fans be escorted out?
I think they probably would have been.
I think so too.
Yeah. Should be.
I think they would have been. The Astros chose not to. They gave them a warning, is what they did. They warned
them. That's nice.
If another ball comes over here in this exact same spot, you do that again, you're out of here.
Don't do that. Don't do it again. You got it?
If another maybe home run ball is hit to this seat, I'm telling you guys, don't do that again.
617-779-0985. We will, I promise, get your calls right after this.
Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You didn't catch the story on James when he pitched in game two. Essentially, it was a diagnosis of sleep apnea, which he did not know he had. He knew he had low energy. Was pitching professionally, and then once that was discovered, he got the CPAP machine, changed his life, certainly changed his career path, felt more energy to work out, felt more energy to strengthen that arm and that velocity, was able to get into some off-season workouts more regularly, and sure enough, as if he hit the lottery, He went from a 90-92 mile an hour fastball pitcher to a triple digit fastball pitcher with all the skill of a pitcher who had to get by with breaking stuff to survive in the minor leagues.
And he no longer needs to take Viagra. All of it, thanks to getting better sleep.
I want it to end tonight, so I don't have to listen to his broadcast crew anymore.
10 to 12 miles per hour on his fastball. Can't imagine how many inches it's added. I mean, what a miracle. He's hit the lottery.
This Anderson guy. Brian what Anderson else does he do?
It's like he hit the lottery.
Does he call games for any teams?
Oh, he hit the lottery. He hit the damn lottery.
Yeah.
He got the CPAP machine. Changed his life.
Well, I get that, but give me a break. And that's why you can throw 12 miles an hour faster?
Yeah.
Get out of here. That is insane.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Maybe we could do an 8-hour talk show, just poking us up to a sleep thing. Slap. Sleep apnea.
To answer your question C-slap. About Anderson.
C-slap.
Anderson used
got
to be.
The CPAP machine. CPAP. Changed his life.
Anderson used to be the guy who did the Brewers. But
I thought so. I thought he did Milwaukee baseball.
But he doesn't do it anymore. I don't think. Let me double check that.
Because like Orsillo gets gigs, he does. You know, he does.
He's
San
like all
Diego.
National now.
He is now.
I was gonna say is
he does the NCAA tournament. I think he does all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he's not doing the Brewers. I thought for some reason he wasn't doing. I'm gonna double check
like,
that right now.
Probably did like go to the 60% of their games. Probably.
Oh no, he still is.
Yep.
Still does TV for the Brewers on FSN Wisconsin.
Suck that one.
From Texas.
You know,
I'm a really big state here in Texas, and we have really big transponders. I could watch
it's a good discussion when they're talking about Humboldt, Texas, and the silent H the other night.
Humboldt.
It's Humboldt.
Not Humboldt, Alvin, like Texas? Humboldt, Texas?
Doesn't Humboldt a watch?
Oh, Nolan Ryan, he's from Alvin, Texas, and Evaldi's from Alvin, Texas. And
Brock
Texas.
Holt, 30 minutes away.
Oh, God.
There is a lot of symmetry between pitchers from Alvin, Texas, and triple-digit fastballs.
Yeah, I don't think that Nathan Evaldi's going to be Nolan Ryan, but that's just me.
Played his college ball at Rice.
I mean, I hope Evaldi continues to pitch well, but I don't think he's turning into Nolan Ryan. Just my thought. I don't think that's what he's going to be. Have you seen Nolan Ryan behind the plate this series?
Yeah.
He looks different. He looks
sort of
older.
Morphing into John Lithgow.
Yeah. He just looks a little older. In my mind, he will always be like,
you know, like remember Chevy 40-ish. Chevy Chase, when you saw Chevy Chase at the end of the like the new Vacation movie, where they go and they see Chevy Chase, they visit him out west, you probably didn't see it. It was god-awful movie.
I didn't see that.
I couldn't pay attention to anything behind home plate except for the LSU guy, Kimberling, in the background. And then people started joining him as the game went on.
Yeah, that was good. I give him credit for that.
Well, it's
that
a fad.
That thing is worth trolling.
It's a fad here in Boston.
That thing is worth trolling.
When you walk around,
when I see other fans do that, like I saw that last night, I go, "Good job." That's worth a troll job. This guy can't find the place to save his life, yet he's got this big, stupid, intimidating arm dangle. Go ahead, troll that every game. Do your job, Astros fans.
He was serious about it, though. He started to do it from his seat.
I love it.
And then when everyone started standing up, he went to the aisle to get in the camera's view so he could see.
Joe, that needs a front page spread in the Globe.
Oh yeah,
Kimberling.
Where's it? Hey, excuse me. How do you get to the casket flag? And it's down that way. That way.
Worth trolling. Matt's in Bill Ricka. Matt, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey. Hi, Matt.
My question to you guys is not trying to get ahead of myself here, but if the Red Sox win, which I'm thinking they will, they're going to have to go to the NL and play three games with the NL rules, which means there's no DH. So then your hottest player right now is probably going to be the MVP of the ALCS, Jackie Bradley, is probably going to have to sit on the bench so they can play JD in right field.
Yes. And what's your question? Would I do it? Yes.
No, I mean, obviously you have to do it, but it kind of hurts them, don't you think?
Well, it's like saying you don't play Brock Holt after he hits for a cycle. You know, I mean, the guy's had two really good games hitting. He's had 7 RBIs off 2 hits.
It's hard.
Going into last night, he had 7 RBIs off 2 hits.
Maybe we could pull it up, or I can track down Mask. I think he's in the building. How did they phrase the question at the top of their show yesterday? I heard it as I was walking out of the building. Would you still trade Jackie Bradley? But there was like
for a setup guy.
Okay, they're good. Thank you.
Would you trade Jackie Bradley for like heads a middle, up. Would you flip him for a hit for a setup guy?
For a middle of the road setup guy, just you know, a
middle of the road yeah. or
no,
decent.
Just a decent setup.
Yeah,
a decent
oh yeah,
setup
let's say guy. Decent. Right, better than average.
Three
yeah.
for three. Boom. Yes, yes, yes. They said.
Okay, let's update it. For, do it on this show today. Would you trade Jackie Bradley Jr. for a decent setup guy?
Oh my yes. God, yes,
yes, yes, yes. I would. Would I bench Jackie Bradley Jr.? I know he's been great. He's been real hot, and he's been
JD
very
Martinez.
Helpful. Would you bench him in the World Series to make sure JD Martinez is in the lineup?
I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
Even though JD hasn't hit, I think there's a better chance.
I believe in the law of averages, yeah. and I believe he's going to come back.
Swing velocity, all that, yeah.
Yep. Yep. I'm benching Jackie Bradley Jr. to keep JD Martinez in
dying.
The lineup.
I was dying laughing, too, listening to the Bradley stuff post-game the other night, and he sounds just like Patrick Mahomes. Like, he and Mahomes are the same.
Who, Jackie Bradley Jr.?
Jackie Bradley. Right. Jim, if you could somehow pull up a little
that.
Mahomes.
No, I don't.
And give me a little Jackie JBJ.
I don't hear that at
it's
all,
about the same.
Actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't.
It's huge. We're playing a really good team in Houston. Runs are at a premium. We never feel like enough runs. If is it going to be enough? So, you know, it's very, very special for us.
Efforting.
We can kill 30 seconds yeah. talking about something else.
Who was the guy that made fun of Mahomes? Was this head coach? Was Andy Reid?
Allen's in California.
Do it. Hi, Allen.
Allen.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I was kind of in cardiac arrest last night, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go on a walkabout into the Redwoods for the next few days because I don't know how Cora is going to get the pitching talent that remains fresh. Ready to go.
How big those Redwoods get in diameter?
I don't know. 15, 20, Jesus. 25, 30 feet.
Some sight, huh?
I can't take it. I'm gonna have a meltdown.
Okay, yeah. Legitimate concern, Alan. This bullpen has been taxed now, and if Price doesn't go deep tonight, which I think is probably likely given how long he threw last night, so I think they're going to have him on a pitch count tonight. If he doesn't go deep, and they start going to the bullpen early, how much more taxed is it going to be before they get back here?
What about the law of averages? It's the one thing we were concerned with, and they've played above it. They've pitched above and beyond what we thought, their expectations, what they could be.
It's not about what they could be. It's about their usage. Their innings.
I know that, but you even just said about J.D. Martinez. Eventually, you know, the law of averages is going to equal out. He's going to eventually hit here, so I'm going to take my chances with him. At some point, this bullpen's going to get hit and crushed. I hope it's not tonight or Saturday.
All right, give Zoe his Mahomes.
Mahomes.
Throwing and hitting, he made a great play. And then on the second one, just in the 2-minute drill, we were rolling.
Give me Jackie.
I honestly, not even thinking about that series at the moment. Just trying to focus on this series. Obviously, you have growing pain.
Nailed it.
Agree or disagree?
Marty?
I disagree. I don't think they're that similar.
Wow.
It's going to be joined by Patrick Mahomes now and Andy Reid.
And for good measure, we'll throw in.
To see the queen.
That was Michael Irvin.
Was that Jackie Bradley Jr. No, Mahomes?
That was the good day, mate. We were going to go over to
the Mate Mountain.
Yes.
90 seconds of commercials. Here's Harvey.
Some crumpets.
From the town of Bear Tires, WDZ-FM-HD, Houston. This is the home of the New England Patriots. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Beasley Media Group Station.